Okay, so as you can see, spring has started in Redmond. We're taking Channel 9 outside. Why are we here, Weston and Bart?
Got a new release.
Awesome. And, well, tell us about it. Okay. First of all, why did it take 2.5 months, damn it?
Well, one thing we've been, you know, hammering on is doing tests and, you know, getting rid of deadlocks and, you know,
a lot of tests.
Lots of tests and, you know, finding all sorts of edge cases. Like
1,500 tests.
1,500 tests, 99% first coverage.
Yes. Yeah.
So that has kept us busy quite a bit, and we're proud to have a new release out there now.
Yep. Awesome. So tell us something about the big features, the big changes.
So one of the things I'm most excited about is that we've kind of taken the idea of schedulers that we introduced in the last release, and we've expanded on that idea in two different ways. We've both added a number of new schedulers and renamed some of the existing ones. And then we've also extended it with not only a notion of time spans, but also you can use absolute times or date time offsets. And then finally, we removed the time drift from the operators in the same kind of idea. So that's one of my things I'm most excited about, personally.
Okay, good.
To add to that, maybe we've also, you know, introduced meaningful defaults for all the operators, so that, you know, the default schedule is really what you want in 99% of the cases.
Yeah, and if it's not, then tell us, so we can know and hopefully get that fixed with operators.
Sounds good. So one of the things I saw is that there's yet another DLL.
Yes, that is true.
Tell me a bit about that.
Well, what we wanted is, are you referring to, I think, the observable DLL?
Yes.
Right? Yes, so what we wanted is we wanted to make sure that that the observable type was available in all frameworks. And in particular, one of the things is we want CoreEX also to be able to reference and use iObservable as well. So we need to lift iObservable out of everything else and put it in its own DLL.
Okay, so this would mean that I could use observables even if I don't decide to ship the reactive library, right?
That's correct.
Nice. Okay, so tell me about some other stuff that is cool in this new release.
Okay, well, one thing you will notice is that we moved the scheduler, so maybe that's a logistic change.
And the disposables.
And the disposables to CoreEX, and also we've been working on like the overload resolution for Windows Base and Windows Forms.
Yeah.
So you don't longer have to, you know, include all of those files in order to simply, you know, use a dispatcher as scheduler or a control scheduler.
Okay, so I'd like to dive a bit deeper in both of these. So why did the disposables move?
Okay, so why the disposables move? We believe it's, you know, common functionality that you can use outside of RX as well. So CoreEX is sort of, you know, you could say the V4 version of Core or whatever. Like, it sort of adds common functionality to the framework. And, you know, disposables like composite disposable, future disposable, all of those can be used in a variety of cases.
Okay, so the disposables just form a feature on its own.
Yeah.
It's kind of an algebra over disposables that you could apply to anything outside of RX.
One thing I want to know about that is that one disposable disappeared. He was killed.
Okay.
The lock disposable.
The lock disposable. Yes. So he was actually the culprit at the heart of almost all deadlocks that were reported, or that we found also independently. And I kind of want to briefly explain that, so that if you ever see a deadlock yourself in your code that you may have written in some of your own operators, that you might know where to look. Okay.
Sure.
So here's what the idea is. So if you have like a chain of operators, right? Maybe this is like an event that's pumping. So it's pumping out events through this whole thing. Maybe this is like a select. Maybe this is like a where and so on. It's pumping events out this way. Then so now the data flows from the producer all the way through to the consumer. However, when you dispose the flow of control goes the opposite way. You start disposing on this guy, and eventually it disposes, you know, the hand that went through here and so on and so forth, back. So it kind of flows, information flows backwards. Now this is, that means when you acquire locks inside operators, when you're sending messages out, that means you acquire here first, like number one here, number two here, number three here. So this is kind of like a, you know, a partial order over the, how you acquire these locks in this direction. When you dispose, you actually acquire the locks since the invocations go backwards from 3-2-1, which means that you acquire locks in the opposite order, which means you can deadlock, right? And so what we did in order to remove the deadlocks that people reported is we made it so that when you dispose things that you don't hold locks, we made sure that they're safe without locks. So that way, there's only ever locks acquired when it's going out, but not when it's going back in.
Okay.
So that's kind of how we did that.
Nice.
So if you ever have a deadlock, that'd be one of the first places I would look if I were here.
Good advice. So I was going to bring back the other thing that you brought up, okay. The namespace thing and like the includes reference assemblies. So what was going on there? Why was that happening, and how did you get around it?
So if you start using, you know, the observable type, which has observe on and dispatch on, and you say, you know, I want to do, you know, an observe on control scheduler to do things on the Windows Forms thread, well, it turns out that the compilers actually see, you know, the other overloads, and during, you know, finding out what you exactly mean, they say, well, you need to reference all of this other DLLs.
And that is to be able to do the resolving, because
exactly.
You could be using a type that is a derived type from one of the overloads, right?
Yep, exactly. So one of the things we did there is basically, you know, move those extension methods into a separate namespace, system Windows Forms and, you know, system Windows threading, I believe. So when you actually have that thing included, well, during overload resolution, we'll only see the observe on for the appropriate namespace. So in that case, you only need to reference either Windows Space or the system Windows Forms DLL.
Nice. Cool. So one of the other changes I saw, the really big changes, is like this is critical exception thing is gone.
Yeah, so exceptions were kind of overhauled in Rx. Is critical is part of that. There's other things too.
Okay. So tell me about that.
Start with the is critical. So it used to be the case in previous releases that when an exception was thrown to Rx, if it was in the class of critical exceptions, then we would not catch them and then pipe them through the on-air. Rather, we just let them bubble up into the ambient context, whatever they happen to be.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is that we ran across a couple of problems. Number one, we ran across the problem that the set of critical exceptions is not really well-defined. And there's different lists out there about what exactly that was. And number two, it didn't end up being as big of a deal as we thought it was. So, and because of that, we made the decision to remove the check for whether exceptions are critical or not. And now all exceptions just get piped through to the on-air.
Okay, and an important detail is there that in .NET 4.0 there are certain critical exceptions that you cannot even catch at all, right?
That's correct.
So .NET 4 does the right thing for you.
Yes, that's correct.
And we should add to that that this actually means that exception behavior is aborting or terminating.
Yes, that's the other
just
thing.
Like, you know, everything in the CLR and .NET actually, when you throw an exception and you don't do anything to catch it, well, it will immediately happen. It's not like if you have a delay operator, for example, well, you know, the exception will not get delayed.
Right.
It will come out immediately.
Because it's like abort.
It's like abort, exactly.
Right. So actually, why don't you explain on the whiteboard about how, like, zip, for example, works.
Uh-huh.
And what the possible ways we could have had error semantics with respect to zip,
yep.
And then kind of show what we chose and why that makes sense.
Okay,
does
sure.
That sound good?
Yes, yeah, definitely. So one of the problems with zip is, of course, you have two sides and you need to see messages on both sides before you can actually decide what to do on the output stream. So say that you have two input streams here. Let me draw them actually horizontally. So that's stream one, and then you have stream two over here. And there are a variety of things that can happen here. So, of course, the obvious thing is, like, if you have two messages, well, you know, once the second message arrives, we see that the previous message is still there, and we can actually combine them to provide an output value there. Now, if an exception happens, you have all sorts of combinations that can happen. So, say that there is an exception here. Obviously, in this particular case, what you would expect is, you know, to see the exception coming out. Now, if one of those streams might be, for example, empty, the question is, what should you do? Like,
when you mean by empty, you mean that does it have a value, or do you mean it completes?
It completes.
Okay.
It completes immediately. You know, then the question is there actually a race going on?
Yeah.
Like, because, you know, if the completion message comes here, and we see the exception first, do we want to throw the exception? Or it could be the case that this thing took a long time, and, you know, it could also have been the case that, you know, the completion happened there, and then we say, well, you know, a zip of empty with, you know, something that will happen in the future will always be empty because there's nothing to combine with. So now the question is, will we actually terminate or will we throw the exception? Now, if we actually decide to throw the exception here, well, we sort of have to wait till we see a message coming in before we can sort of decide whether or not it's an exception or it's a graceful value, or it might even be another stream that will never terminate. So your zip will actually zip off empty with something will not be empty.
Right, because the key point there is whenever you wait for something to come in, you can never distinguish between that and never.
Exactly. Yeah, like this thing could go on and on and on.
Right.
Yeah. So, so yeah, to cover those cases, well, we actually reasoned about, you know, all of the combinations of empty and never and, you know, return and some data, which is, you know, non-trivial stream, the throw case. And we actually came up with, you know, a whole matrix of those particular behaviors.
Yes.
So, yeah.
But what did we decide then?
Okay, so what we decided here is that, you know, since there is a race with that exception, we're actually waiting at this point, right?
For the empty.
Yes, yeah.
But not for exception.
No.
Exception comes out
as an exception, yeah. As an exception occurs over here, it will come out immediately, you know, or if the exception occurs if the exception occurs here, well, you know, we'll not be waiting for, you know, a value to come in here. We know, you know, it's an exception. An exception will always combine to be an exception in the zip case.
Yes.
So we come out immediately over here.
That's right.
Like in the past, we would actually wait till we see a message, and then we will be combining those two and come to the conclusion the exception has to come out here.
Which means that in some cases, an exception occurred, but it would never actually be
exactly.
Paired
this
up.
Thing is totally, you know,
empty.
If this thing is never, well, your exception is just swallowed by the system in that case.
And another race is that what if both have an exception, which of the two are you now going to get outside, or you have to do an aggregate exception or something like that, right?
Yes, some people brought that up on the forums where they said that, you know, possibly we might want to have all the exceptions that occur. But if you decide that, that means you have to wait for all the exceptions to occur, which means you may never get any exceptions, if there was one.
Yeah, because if one is actually not cooperating and being, you know, never, then, you know, we are accumulating exceptions and we say, okay, what are we going to do?
Yeah. Right.
You know, we'll never actually have a chance to sort of push it out there because, like, one stream is simply hanging in some sense.
Yeah, so we went through all of our operators and made sure that they have this abort-like semantics for errors.
Mm-hmm. Okay, nice. So you just mentioned that you have 99% code coverage?
99.79.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, nice. So, any interesting bugs that you found doing this?
Yeah, there were some interesting bugs that we found from it. For most part, what they were around corner cases, the parts that you probably don't usually see very often. Because what we do when we do this testing, we kind of mentioned this before in a video, is we do deterministic testing by using like this virtual scheduling, virtual time, like we mentioned in the previous video. And so what we do is we write these tests as if all time, you know, we orchestrate time together and we assert various things about the output. And so we can check all the corner cases. We can even check concurrent situations deterministically that way. Is there any bugs that came to your mind in particular?
Well, some of the, you know, other kinds of bugs, like not in the category of corner cases, is where you need to pass on state, you know, like you have a tremendous amount of overloads, you know, that take in schedulers, and you need to make sure they actually get into the operators that we call into in the implementation. So we found a couple of those where, you know, we're passing in our own, you know, test scheduler that we actually have, and we come to the conclusion, well, it doesn't pick up and it's hanging on some other threads. Well,
yes,
because we've been passing on all the state there.
That's true.
Yeah.
So then
what came to mind actually is group by.
Okay.
Group by got a major overhaul, like complete, you know, reworked or whatever. It's so what group by does now is it actually solves many of the problems that group by had before, because before group by was not performant enough. Oftentimes it would accumulate too much data as in the groups, where it doesn't do that now. And so let me explain what that means, because group by is somewhat nuanced in how it works. But it makes a lot of sense, and it's very performant now. It does the right thing. So, if you have a stream of stuff, and let's just color this actually. Let's say we have some blue notifications. We're going to group it by color.
Mm-hmm. You want me to draw some red notifications?
Yes, that'd be great. We'll just do that.
Screen is getting crowded.
Yeah. Good? Okay.
Yep.
Okay. So here we go. Now we want to group this by color.
Mm-hmm.
So what we did before, let me explain what we used to do. So what we did before is that when you group this, it would create the result would be a new stream that would have a new, I'm going to have a black for a group. So there would be like a new group here, which would be the blue group. And then there would be the red group would be created here.
Mm-hmm.
And the green group would be created here.
Yeah, at the point we see the first element coming in, we can create a new group, obviously.
Yes, and then if you subscribe to this guy, he is himself a stream, and so on. And these would contain the values. right? This is kind of what it did before. Now, what? But it's not exactly what it did, because what they would do is it would actually... it was kind of a hard thing, because there's this outer stream. So this was like, the type of this is I observable of T, essentially. There's like a group observable in there, but that's really, it's an I observable of T. Now, the inner groups, there was kind of, we were kind of worried about how to have them, because you have to subscribe to them, you know, what if you missed values? So we used to use a replay subject inside of there, but that was the wrong thing to do, and that's why there was a huge memory problem, because as things went along, it would basically accumulate, all values would be stored and remembered. And so what we do now instead is that when you subscribe to this one, of course, when this thing happens, then you can immediately, during that on next message, subscribe to the inner group and process all of these messages. But there's no replay subject involved, which means that the only memory that's used is just the memory to remember which groups there are currently available. So if you have like a finite and a small set of groups, that means you're actually going to have a finite and small set of memory for your entire group by process. Another thing is that there's only one even if you subscribe to all of, four of these different streams, mm-hmm. there's only one subscription that happens to this guy, which was not the case before, because it used to be the case that since these were replay subjects, that means if you disposed this subscription, then the other subscriptions wouldn't be live anymore in some sense. They would only remember what had previously happened before you disposed this. However, now it's the case that if you have four subscriptions here and you dispose of this one, then there's still a subscription to the source one while there are still subscriptions here. And then if all of them go away, then it stops subscribing to this guy. So it's kind of like the reverse. Actually, what it really looks like, if you look at group by, it's the reverse of select many. Where select many, there's many different sources that you're subscribing to. And only when you unsubscribe from all the sources, when you subscribe to the outer one, this is like the reverse. Now you unsubscribe when you unsubscribe from all the outputs, then the single subscription to the input.
Very nice. And then, so talking about bugs that we found, I remember you coming into my office saying, "Damn it, there's a bug in select." Can you tell a bit about that?
Oh yes. So it's kind of funny because we were using some PECs at one point to find some bugs. We're writing some test cases. What we're having PECs actually generate what the input was and what when the input value should come through, and then we're asserting various things about the output. And it turns out that we had a bug in select that's been there for however many years we've been working on RX, which is like over 2 years now. And it's been there the whole time, and we never realized it was there. And the bug is this. So if we have X's, select, and then we take X in here, and then we say, you can see it this way, throw exception, right? So now the problem is, before we do this, actually, let's right before we do this statement, we're going to do like some global side effect, and then we'll throw. Okay. So this is right there, and what's going on is that if a message, so suppose one message gets sent through, it has a global side effect, and then it throws the exception. Now this causes an on-air message to come out the other end. But what didn't happen is we didn't stop future messages from invoking the selector function. So that meant that another message would be sent through, because this guy didn't produce the on-air message. That means he can still produce more messages. So he produces the next on-next message. And this goes in here and does the global side effect again. Right? Now this other thing is ignored because we've already sent an on-air message out. But the problem is that the side effects of the selector function would happen even after an error occurred. And so now we've actually fixed it so that in the selector function, if an exception happens, then the selector function will not be invoked again.
Nice. So it shows the importance of testing.
That's right. Absolutely. Yep.
Cool. So anything else you can say about this new release?
Well, actually, this makes me think also of the new run operator in some sense.
Okay, yeah.
Where you sort of want to have the side effects, and actually, yes. If you look at the implementation, a possible implementation of that, you do it using a select which has a side effect.
Right.
And so, our new run operator allows you to specify on next, on air, on completed. And we actually block till either on air or completed is actually happening, invoking all of those actions for side effects.
It's like a blocking subscribe.
A blocking subscribe, exactly.
So this means that people don't have to put a console.read line in their apps anymore.
Exactly. Yes. You can simply do run, and it will, you know, sit there forever till, you know, the next message, uncompleted or on error message comes to you. And if you look at the implementation, a possible implementation of that is just like the do operator, which is basically a select which has a side effect and then passes on, you know, the value to the output. So this is exactly this case, because if in your handling you would actually throw an exception, you want to make sure that, you know, no further side effects are occurring there. Like it's really the on error case is terminating in that case. So it's very analogous to this thing.
That's true. And then another one that came to mind, actually, is that we've also added aggregates, right? And so people have been talking about aggregates before, and we made a change. We still have first and last and single, but all the other aggregates now actually return iObservable of whatever it was previously. And so this is kind of funny because in SQL, if you say, you know, get me the count of, you know, some relation or something, then it actually returns back a table with one column that has the answer. So it didn't give you back like this new scalar value. It gave you back like a table you can then, you know, use for your future queries and so on.
And,
so
and actually in the data access stack, you have like specialized methods that deal with the single table case and the single row case called execute scalar or something.
Exactly.
So it's kind of a degenerate case of having an entire table.
That's right. And so in some sense, like first, single, and default are really like convert like iObservable to scalar value, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas the other aggregates actually keep you still, you know, in the monad, and so that means that you can actually still do future compositions with them. So like count, for example.
So this addresses the issue that I raised in my blog, that those operators before were very dangerous because you could create deadlocks with those operators.
Yeah, that's true. And they actually, you know, they actually cause things to run, they're not lazy, and now all of that's not true anymore because we've actually keep them in the observables.
Nice.
Yeah, so you can do things like timeout, for example, or, you know, like really, you know, time-based operations on top of, you know, the value that you got back there.
Yes.
Like, because it's still an iObservable. Otherwise, you would have to do your own threading and, you know, introduce something to go on the background thread, call that blocking operator, and then, you know, do all of that stuff yourselves.
Yep. Nice. So what's next for RX? Are we going to wait another 2.5 months for the next release? Or
no, it seriously causes me like physical anguish to wait for between RX releases. So we're going to really do our best to do more frequent updates.
Good. Well.
And so let us know what we can do. What, you know, what things are the pain points? What things you'd like to see added? What things you'd like to see removed? And we will definitely listen to you.
Great. Thank you, guys.
Okay. Thank you.